Saturday edition of the Anaheim Calling podcast. I almost said Saturday night edition, but today's game took place at 10 a.m. our time, 1 p.m. Eastern time. The Ducks taking on my Montreal Canadiens today. Not really much of a conflict for me watching my childhood team go against the Ducks. The Canadiens actually taking this one 5-2 in what was kind of it depends what side of the coin you really look at for this Ducks team. You know, some pretty major mistakes, some good play here and there, goaltending troubles. This game really had a bit of everything. Joined today by the ever trustworthy Jake Rudolph. Jake, how's it going?
It's going all right. It wasn't the best way to wake up, but I mean, after that game, I was able to jump into Overwatch and win about 3 games straight, so that brought me back up.
There you go. Yeah, I actually had to leave after the first period to go coach my Pee-wee team, and we pulled out a big win, 10-7. So no goalies in this. There were no goalies for either team. So
wait, what?
Yeah, our goalie didn't show up, and then their goalie didn't show up either. So
did you throw someone into the goal? Did you have to go into the goal, or did you play posts?
So what they do is they let you have. I mean, it's kind of like an empty net. You get an extra skater out there, and he kind of acts as the goalie. So it was pretty fun. No, we pulled out a big win.
No shooter as the goalie.
No. I think it's better that way because you can use your goalie as like a playmaker from all the way back, try to stretch pass.
Well, and there are times the shooter is a better goalie than an actual goalie.
Yeah, seriously. But yeah, it was a crazy game. We were up 8-6 with like a minute left, and then they make it 8-7, and then one of our guys, who basically looks like Nick Ritchie but just 13 years old, just scores a huge goal with like only a few seconds left, makes it 9-7. And this kid, I mean, you talk about joy, you talk about celebration, he was just going crazy after that goal. So it was great to see.
His celly was on point.
His celly was on point, and the parents were going crazy, and I was hyped on the bench. So it was a lot of fun. Anyway, but that's enough about that. Today's game, not so great for Ducks fans. Great for me. I'm actually wearing a Canadiens jersey right now. I figured I'd wear it for the pod. Not that anyone can see. I'm wearing my PK Subban protest jersey. So let's get right into this one. First period, Ducks get off to probably one of their top 5 worst starts this season. Is that fair?
Yeah, in terms of score-wise, yes. It wasn't very good.
Score-wise, and, you know, so here's the thing. If you look at the stats for the first period, you would think, wow, the Ducks were absolutely dominant. Carrying the play. I mean, all the numbers certainly back that up. Shot attempts 29-5, scoring chances 12-2, high danger chances 4-1. But the goals that the Canadiens were able to score, really bad in zone play from the Ducks. So let's start with the first goal here. Logan Shaw, in his revenge game against the Ducks. And never underestimate the revenge angle when it comes to these games. Byron Fraze takes it down from the goal line, gets around his defender, basically jams it towards the net, and a rebound squirts out for Logan Shaw to bang it home. Canadiens up 1-0. And at first it looks like, well, you know, both D-men were definitely puck-watching in the corner. But on further replay, we see some issues in the Ducks' defensive zone coverage.
Yeah, I mean, the easy thing to point out right away is that Perry didn't play this that well. I think I'll cut him a little bit of slack. He's the winger low. That's not exactly his responsibility. For those of you that kind of watch hockey and don't know the just very basic systems that happen, a lot of times the wingers are the guys that should be up high. They're going to be covering the points. The center drops down low to help cover the third forward, and then the two defensemen take the other two forwards. That's if you're kind of looking at it in a very basic sense. And obviously there are times that doesn't always happen and the center ends up high and the winger has to come down low to cover. This is one of those cases where Perry as the winger had to be low, didn't play it well, wasn't a great look. And so that's the first thing you can really see there. But when you look at it more in depth, Vermette really looks bad on this play. So as the forward that's up high covering for Perry and Perry's down low covering for Vermette, Vermette's responsibility is that guy up high. And if you kind of zoom in and look at it from basically behind the goal, you can see that defender who's up high kind of goes along the line and then jumps down and makes a beeline towards the net and really kind of takes out one of the defenseman's sticks in front, which allows Shaw to get to the rebound to pot it. And it's just Vermette standing up there with no one around him. And it was just really poor awareness of his own defensive zone. Because once his guy flies down, he's got to follow and he's got to take out that stick.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I just think that with in regards to Antoine Vermette, you know, there's this picture that gets painted of him as this responsible defensive center. But to me, like on this play, and everyone makes mistakes, but this is like very basic, yes. Like hockey 101. Like you're the center. You have to protect the middle of the ice. You have to watch for a guy, you know, as the third man in. And even initially, before Shaw makes his beeline to the net, I'm not even really sure who he's even covering on that play because he's not really looking at the point guy.
He's not.
So, not a great start.
Yeah, the guy at the point basically kind of goes from near the corner of the blue line to start skating towards the center. Vermette's just kind of standing around up there doing nothing.
Yeah, and his stick's not even on the ice. You know, his knees aren't bent. Like, I just don't really know what he was doing there. Well, just maybe thinking about, you know, what poutine place he'll go to after the game.
And taking this conversation, staying on Vermette, but the reason why, and this is what's kind of frustrating to me, he's considered a good defensive center because he's good at faceoffs.
Because hashtag faceoffs, yeah.
Hashtag faceoffs. And I've said this a couple times on here, but yes, faceoffs, of course, are going to matter. It can win you the puck, and in extreme situations, like on the penalty kill, if you win it and clear it, or late in the game in a similar fashion, of course that's going to matter. But overall, you can't tell me that a faceoff with halfway through the game in the defensive zone matters that much. It's the exact same thing as if the puck ends up in the corner and there's a board battle there. And let's say, let's just say Vermette's there and he loses it and consistently loses those. He's considered a good defensive center because he just wins the battle at the faceoff dot, even though he's losing every other puck battle along or at any other point in the game. And all a faceoff comes down to is just another puck battle. And the only reason why it's given such high importance, in my opinion, is it's a very easily measured stat. It's something that you can say, all right, here's where it happened. This team won it. Let's mark it down. And
yeah,
if people took the time to measure, and I mean, I think I'm as much at fault as everyone else because it takes a lot of time to measure, to manually track all that different type of data. But if someone were to do that, that would give you a better picture of who's good defensively.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's been a lot of studies done on, you know, the impact of faceoffs and, you know, like if you don't basically if you don't generate a shot with, like, let's say you're in the offensive zone at even strength, if you don't generate a shot within like the first few seconds, the odds of you know, or the likelihood of you getting a shot after that, after winning the faceoff, go, like, they basically flatline to like zero. So it's not especially effective, but it's just the impact isn't quite there as some people would make it out to be. And I mean, I think the correlation between faceoff percentage and like winning is some, or like, or Corsi, or like actual shot attempts is something like a 0.2 R squared. Well, so it's not very high, not very strong a relationship.
Well, I can remember in that same, it was a study, I think it was, I forgot who did it, but it was someone basically tracing shot attempts after a faceoff win and after a faceoff loss and tracking it by zones. And I think the way that it works, or the way what they found in their study, is that regardless of if it's a win or a loss, within 10 seconds, those number normalize. So
that's what I was referring to. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So what that means is basically if you win, then you'll see probably a jump in your shot attempts for maybe 10 seconds or so. If you lose, you'll see a bump down for about 10 seconds or so. But after those 10 seconds, everything normalizes. Everything comes back to around the same point. And so it gives you maybe a 10-second push in possession, which can matter every once in a while. You can get a goal in those 10 seconds. But we're talking not that it's not like it's that long. It's not like minutes of sustained pressure due to one faceoff win.
Yeah, I mean, the area where I will say that faceoffs do matter, obviously, is special teams, because if you win a faceoff on the power play, like that basically can make or break your power play.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, conversely, on the penalty kill, you know, you win that faceoff, you get the puck out. So let's move on through this first period here. Second goal of the game, Joe Morrow. Sometimes you can forget the guys in the NHL, but he was actually part of the Tyler Seguin trade way back when. Gets a power play goal for the Habs. Victor Mete gets it across to Morrow, who gets a one-timer off, and goes short side. Not really much of a screen on Miller. And at that point, you know, we're only about 8 minutes into the game. Ducks already down 2-0, and you're getting the sense that maybe this isn't Miller's night. And that would prove to be the case not too long after that. David Schlemko, the Canadians come down the ice on basically a 4-on-2, and you're wondering how the heck did that happen. Galchenyuk gets it across to Schlemko, who basically snipes it home from the slot, nobody on him. And if you look at the replay after the goal, obviously a very nice shot from Schlemko. No one in front of Miller, and, you know, obviously it's from the slot, so you can't really totally blame the goalie, but maybe he makes that save if he is more on his game. But on the replay, you see all three of the Ducks forwards back in the neutral zone for whatever reason, and maybe it's because the puck was down low right before that, and, you know, the puck squirted loose, but not a good look from the Ducks forwards there, basically gifting the Canadians a goal. So at that point, it's 3-0. And for the first time this season, Ryan Miller gets the yank.
Yeah, and I mean, he wasn't, let's be honest here, Miller was not great tonight. But
no, I don't think so.
He wasn't terrible. You can't blame, obviously he's going to take some blame on those goals. He actually, if you're looking at GSAA, was at a -2.11 tonight.
Oof.
So
yeah, that's rough.
In 10 minutes, an average goalie would have allowed 2.1 goals less than Miller would have. But yeah, I think if we,
which to me checks out, because two of the goals are kind of questionable.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But at the end of the day, power play goal against, odd man rush against, and poor defensive zone structure. And if we want to talk about the power play goal specifically, and kind of this is now the third penalty kill goal that Ryan Miller has allowed in the last two games, and I think it's almost as if the goaltending is coming back down to earth a little bit at on special teams. We had focused on this on the mid-season report type podcast, but John Gibson has been an absolute beast at special teams, and that's kind of kept special teams afloat in terms of the penalty kill. It's made them look a lot better than they've actually been in terms of shot ratios and those types of things. And this, it seems like this was that coming back down to earth a little bit. And I don't think Ryan Miller was as good in the penalty kill situations as John Gibson was, but that wasn't the best goal to allow in that situation. I mean, the puck does move from one side and gets him moving, but it's not a perfect shot short side. He should probably make that save.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I had to get him moving, but look, goalies are paid to move, and they're like, this is not, because you get the goalie to move, it doesn't mean he's completely, you know, off the hook. Yeah, tough to completely blame Miller for that first period, but didn't do his team any favors. Thus, the goaltending change was made. Red O'Bara gets into the game. And look, like, we talk about Miller potentially hurting the team in that first period. Also can't ignore the fact that on two of those goals, very blatant defensive miscues. So nothing in hockey ever happens for one specific thing. There's always a ton of factors at play. Let's move on to the second period here. And go ahead.
I believe there was one more goal in that period, wasn't there? Oh, no, never mind. Sorry.
No. Sorry. No, 3-0 after the first period, and if I can pull this back up. So early in the first period,
that's when it was.
or sorry, early in the second period. Wow, this is so embarrassing, by the way. NHL.com, if you look at the video for the recap of the goals, it says Ducks versus Canadians, but Canadians spelled with an A at the end instead of an E. That's it. That's embarrassing.
That's bad for one of your premier franchises.
That's a shame. I mean, how many more Stanley Cups do we need to get respect? Come on now.
I mean, how many of those cups were won when it was like a 6-team league?
Well, let's see.
That joke works much better with the Leafs. Sorry.
Well, they haven't won. They haven't won since. Exactly. I think the last cup they won was in 67.
Which was prior to the major expansion, which was it was still a 6-team league.
But the expansion was in 1967. So was it for the 68 season?
Yes, because I think that's something I've always heard, is that the Leafs last cup came.
Well, it was black and white TV.
Well, yeah, but it was prior to there being more than six teams.
So. See, now you've got me curious, so I'm going to quickly Google this. Let's see. The NHL announced in February 1966 it would expand by six teams. Yes, so it was the 67-68 season. So yeah. The last time the Leafs won a cup was in the original six era. Wow, that is not great. I mean, the Canadians had their amazing dynasty in the 70s. They had like three amazing dynasties, but... The one that's most fresh in people's minds is the 70s with Guy Lafleur, Ken Dryden. And, you know, there were more teams in the league. After that, though, after the 70s, it gets real rough. You have 86 and 93.
Here's a question for you, and we're typically going off the rails like we always do.
Well, hey, the Canadians get a little love on today's show because, fine, you know, they are the opponent. They are the opponent, and we do tend to talk about the other team.
So the kind of something that I've always heard is that the reason why we have 2-minute penalties ending after the goal is scored goes back to the 1970 or in the 70s.
1950s.
Oh, it was the 50s. It wasn't the 70s. Sorry.
Yeah, it was the 50s teams. Yeah.
It was the Montreal Canadiens, though, because they would get one or two power plays, score three or four goals, and that's game over. Because the way it used to be was all penalties would happen, and whether you scored or not, it would go 2 minutes.
Yeah, so I would love that. I would love for that to come back.
And this is my question for you, though, if you want that to come back. Because and this is something that Jeff Merrick always says, how comfortable are you with games being decided on the power play or penalty kill? Are you more comfortable with games being decided there or at 5-on-5?
I'm very comfortable.
Okay, because I've always been of the mindset, let's go to 2-minute majors. Let's make them 2-minute majors. But I think as a whole, I'd rather see a game be decided at 5-on-5. Are you comfortable with a game ending 2-1 with all three goals coming on power plays?
Well, my thing is just don't take penalties. Like,
that's a fair point.
Like, to me, if two things. So I would love to see that. I don't have to see that to like be happy with, but I would like to see something change in regards to the power play rules. So the one I would love to see is that you can't clear it on the penalty kill, or you can't ice it, because why do the rules change? Like, why do you get a benefit? Why do you get to break a rule when you've already broken a rule to get on the penalty kill? You know,
also, I do enjoy that one.
But my thing is, if power plays are way more punitive, then maybe teams stop like messing around and taking penalties, and then the 5-on-5 game opens up. Well, you know,
and this kind of going on your point a bit with no icing, this is maybe a little bit more arbitrary, so it might be easier to say, we're not going to allow icing at any point in time. But what if they move it from the red line to the blue line on a penalty kill? So you at least have to get it out of your zone. You can't clear it out of your zone.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I mean, I guess that's kind of like meeting halfway. Yeah. You know? And I could agree to that, you know, because at least you don't have a guy just, you know, takes a slap shot, you know, from behind his net, and you know, there's like no skill required to make that play.
It forces you to either chip it or skate it out or make a pass out of the zone, and so it's not just. I mean, it would make it so you can't just throw out fourth liners on the penalty kill.
Yeah, I mean, you actually have to be like have the skill to skate it out, because right now, to me, the scales are so lopsided towards defense and goalies that we have to help out the offense a little bit. So
that's fair.
I don't know. I don't go to a hockey game to watch like block shots personally. I don't know about you.
But do you go to a hockey game to watch power plays and penalty kills, or do you go to a hockey game to watch 5-on-5 play?
Oh, I love power plays.
All right, that's fair. I'm just saying.
But I mean, but to me, all I'm saying is like if the power plays are more punitive, if they have more of an impact, I feel like teams will take less penalties, and we might actually see more 5-on-5.
I think that's a fair point, but let me just throw this out there. Would you rather watch a game that is 5-on-5, really good pace, kind of very good flow to the game with maybe a couple penalties here and there, or if you add in and make it 2-minute majors, team takes 3 penalties to 2, that's coming up to, what is that, 6 plus 4, that's 10 out of your 60 minutes being at special teams, and that disrupts the flow. But that happens no matter what if that penalty happens. So I think I may have just talked myself out of that point.
I mean, the thing is, I love watching power plays. I love watching a good power play, like, because it's you. I just love seeing the puck move around and the shots, and like, it's like a high leverage moment, you know. Like, if you kill the penalty, like, it's a, I don't know.
The only downside is it doesn't have the same flow that 5-on-5 does.
No, it's very
one sided.
We're never gonna have a perfect game.
That's a good.
But point. we can strive to be more perfect.
That's fair.
All right, let's get back to the game at hand here. So, on the topic of power plays, the Canadiens' power play this season hasn't really been all that great, which is, I mean, it's been great mostly when Shea Weber has been in, and he's been hurt for coming up on a while here, and, you know, he really has been the focal point of that power play, obviously not in tonight. And, you know, you would think the Canadiens would be better on the power play just because of the amount of talent they can put out in that first unit. And on the goal that would make it 4-0, you definitely saw that talent on full display. Jonathan Drouin, stick handling at the point, sends it down to Alex Galchenyuk on the right side of the ice, who then gets it down to Pat Chiaretti along the goal line. And then Jeff Petrie sneaks in on the weak side, ducks all kind of watching the play on the other side of the ice. And then Pat Chiaretti, it's just kind of a beautiful kind of tic-tac-toe type play. Petrie gets in there and just bangs it home. At that point, it's 4-0, and not really much you can do, I think, there if you're the Ducks, because to me it was just kind of like a perfectly executed play. But, 4-0.
Yeah, it wasn't very good, but I will say this one thing, and this is actually something that I had said in our Slack chat with all the different Anaheim Calling writers, is even though they're down 4-0, it didn't feel like they were out of the game simply because they weren't being dominated completely. They actually played a decent game up to this point, I thought. And also, Anthony Emme was in goal for the Habs.
Yeah, good old Nemo.
Mm-hmm. Good old reliable Anthony Emme.
Gosh, it's still kind of mind-boggling that he's on this team. But I guess I could say that about, like, 7 guys in the Canadiens right now. I'm just rewatching this power play goal for my own enjoyment. Oh man, what a beauty.
I hate it. But the one thing I'll say on that is on that specific play is, and I saw a lot of people saying this, and I kind of agree with it. Lindholm had a bit of an off game tonight, and
yeah, he did.
And on that very specific play, I feel like that's a play he usually makes a lot better. He didn't really get a whole lot on that cross-ice pass, whereas usually he'll kind of get his stick in the right place to get it into a safe zone. That he did a decent job of getting something on it, but it wasn't enough, and so that's where Petrie came in and finished it. And the other thing is, Barrett didn't play that in the best way possible, but it's Red O'Bara, so what do you expect?
Well, I don't know. I guess maybe I'm a little biased, but I just think, like, that's exactly how you draw up that play, you know, if you're the power play. I mean, you know, Galchenyuk skates into the center of the ice, kind of draws attention towards himself. Pacioretty gets it at the goal line. And at that point, you know, he fires it back across. And to me, what may have messed up Lindholm a little bit is that Gallagher was right there in the middle. And so maybe he thought that's where it was going. Okay. Instead, it goes to Petrie, who really is just all alone. And at that point, you're thinking, well, you know, maybe Getzlaff or Kessler should have seen him coming in there. Actually, that's pretty much in the forwards right there to not let a guy creep in like that.
I mean, so, yeah, it was the defense. So that's someone that you would kind of want the forward to be able to be there to cover.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know why Getzlaff and Kessler were both high there. And, you know, yeah, like, Berra kind of looks like a flopping fish on that play. But it's, like, I can't really blame the goalie because that's just a perfectly executed play. So, yeah, anyway, that's my take on that play, at least. So, moving on here through the second period. Not too long after this, Logan Shaw gets a breakaway, and Red O'Bara makes the stop. Ducks just not really looking very sharp defensively throughout this game, and that's kind of where, like, the numbers and the eye test, it's good to kind of, you know, go back and forth between them to make sure you get the best picture of the game possible. You know, the Ducks doing a good job with the other side of the ice, but it just felt like tonight their mistakes seemed a lot more costly than they usually are. They were a lot more impactful than they sometimes can be.
Yeah, I'd kind of say that. This is kind of one of those where expected goals. The Ducks had plenty of chances, but the ones they gave up were not great. And even though this kind of tells the story right here, is in all situations, which I think I'll look at in this, I don't usually like looking at Corsi 4 there just because of power plays kind of changing things, but Corsi 4 was 62.5% to 37.5% Anaheim to Montreal in all situations, whereas expected goals was a whole lot closer. And so that kind of shows you that even though the Ducks were out shooting them, that chances weren't really that much more in favor for the Ducks.
Yeah, the Canadians definitely getting their licks in, certainly helped out by the Ducks' kind of soft defense tonight. But the Ducks do go to the power play later on in the second period, and I did notice that Ryan Kessler was on that first power play unit, bit of a surprise there. And, you know, he's had success on that first unit. If you go back to kind of earlier in 2016-17, you know, was doing a real good job as kind of that guy in the middle of the ice, kind of like in the bumper role or the net front guy.
Yeah.
You know, Getzlaff, Henrique, and Raquel, the other forwards there, along with Cam Fowler, is the lone D-man. And, you know, that kind of startled me a little bit just because I feel like, in a way, Kessler and Henrique, to me, are a little redundant on the same unit. I just feel like they kind of fill out the same role. Although you could argue maybe Kessler's more of a net front guy.
Yeah, that's what I would kind of say to that.
Yeah, but it just feels like there's, like, I don't think there's much of a difference in terms of their skill level or their, like, even their roles. You know, I don't think it's that much of a difference. So I was a little surprised to see that. And then the second unit gets out there, literally nothing is going, which is, like, you know, I could have just stopped that the second unit was out there, but nothing is going. The puck gets stuck along the wall, and then magically the puck breaks free. Perry breaks in all alone in front. Max Pacioretty has to hook him to slow him down, otherwise it's probably a goal. And then the Ducks go back to the power play. This time, was it a 5-on-3? It was a 5-on-3. This time around, Perry gets put on that first unit, and it's poetic justice. You know, Cam Fowler gets the puck at the point. Moves it down to Raquel along the left wing, who then immediately gets it to Perry, who just roofs it one-timer in the slot, and that makes it 4-1 Ducks. So Corey Perry getting on the board, and, you know, I think that this was one of his better games tonight.
Yeah, and it was definitely a really nice goal, and I think it was actually on the ensuing, because then the Ducks actually scored early enough where they could go on the 5-on-4 power play right after that, and I'm pretty sure Perry had a really good golden chance, and actually I think beat Niemi over the shoulder and just was a couple inches over the post. And so I think if we want to look at Perry overall this game, he had one of his stronger games. He was second on the team in individual shot attempts, and the only two guys that had more shot attempts were Raquel and Getzlaff. Both of them had it. Raquel played over a minute and a half more than Perry did. Getzlaff 3 to 4 minutes more than Perry did, and this is in all situations. And then if we're looking at individual scoring chances, Perry led the entire team with 6, and Kessler also had 6 individual scoring chances, and both of them also were tied for the team lead in high danger chances also.
Yeah, and I just thought, you know, visually, Perry was doing a much better job of kind of holding on to the puck in the offensive zone and giving himself a chance to make a play to attack the net. Like, I just feel like he looked a lot more comfortable tonight than he has in recent weeks.
He created a lot of space for himself.
Perry the creator, except not in the sense that we've been looking at in the past few months. And let's see here. About 4 minutes later, the Ducks make it 4-2 on a goal from Ricard Raquel, his 19th goal of the season. Cam Fowler gets it down to Nick Ritchie, gets it on net, gets a rebound. Antti Niemi just leaves a big old rebound right in front, and Ricard Raquel bangs it home. And at that point, it's 4-2. The Ducks get a late power play, and we see Perry back out there on the top unit. So second period looked a lot better, you could say, for the Ducks.
Yeah, I mean, you have one power play goal against, you have one for and one even strength goal for, and even the one against, I mean, it's one of those where it was just, he kind of woofed on the shot and it goes in. We are critical of different parts of it, but it wasn't as if Montreal created this amazing power play chance and potted in on it. It was more one of those that just kind of happens, if that makes sense. And so I think this was overall a really good period for the team. They created a lot. They had a lot of good chances. It was a good bounce back period after what was a bad first period.
Yeah, absolutely. And you feel a little bit better about the numbers that you see in the second period there too. I mean, 18-8 shot attempts for the Ducks. Scoring chances 8-3. High danger chances 4-2. So looked a lot better. Moving on to... Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say this was exactly one of those periods that you kind of look at and you kind of wish that there wasn't an intermission. That's had all the momentum gone, and they were close to finding that third goal on that late power play chance. And kind of one of those where it was a shame that you have to have intermissions and have both teams be able to regroup.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe that the Ducks would start the third period on the power play.
Yes.
I don't know if this was the same power play, but we see the second power play unit out there, and we actually, for once, get to see Brandon Montour on his, you know, shooting side, his off wing. And it's funny because the Ducks' best chance of that power play would actually come where Brandon Montour, not being the one to shoot on this one, gets it across to Hampus Lindholm, who takes a pretty good one-timer, gets pretty much all of that puck. And the puck comes back out to Ryan Kessler right in front, who I think gets one stab at it. Niemi makes the save, gets another shot because the puck comes back out to him, and it just sails right over the net.
Yeah, it was so close. So close.
And at that point, I'm getting my chronology mixed up. This was actually in the second period. What I'm referring to right now is the second period.
Yep, you are correct. I think that was at the very end of the period, though.
Yes, that was at the very end of the period. And at that point, you know, if Kessler can bury that one, that would have made it 4-3 and definitely changes the look of this game. But not to be, I guess, one final thing on the second period. Chris Wagner finishes a check on Charles Hudon, and Hudon definitely shaken. And then Nicholas Deslauriers comes in and tries to, you know, go at it with Wagner. Wagner doesn't take the bait, but I'm getting pretty tired of seeing these Chris Wagner hits, Jake, I gotta say.
I mean, I don't mind that one that much. That was a heavy hit, but the guy had the puck. It was clean.
He didn't have the puck.
Oh, he didn't? Hit. Am I thinking about it wrong?
It was one of those where he got rid of the puck, and then, like, not even a second later, he gets hit. But... Mm. He wasn't separating the guy from the puck.
I mean, yeah, that's just a finishing the check. That's going to happen no matter what. I mean, I get your frustration with it, but that's one of those where I'm not as mad about that one in terms of how, when we go back to when we talked about Nick Ritchie and just philosophically, are we okay with this type of hit being in the game? I'm fine with that one. That's the type of hit where every single team, especially a fourth liner, is going to be making that hit. Those guys are fighting for their lives, and if they can make that hit, that's a memorable thing for the coaches in this league. That will keep them in the lineup for doing that. I don't mind that much. I think that maybe if we want to talk about, are we okay? it's hard because, like I was about to say, are we okay with that hit being in the game? But the coaches are always going to want that to happen. So that's going to be there. I don't mind that. I don't think it was that bad.
Well, keep full disclaimer, I have a little bias at play here because obviously that's my guy getting hit. But I just think that that's a play that requires A, no skill, B, has no positive impact on the play there for the Ducks. You're really just dumping a guy, but he gets his pass off. The play keeps going the other way.
Yeah.
Potentially injure the guy because he's not looking that way. He just made his pass. I just think it's a garbage play. I don't think players who do that really are any good. And, you know, Chris Wagner does have some skill, and he can play hockey, so it's not like he's incapable of playing. But I'm just kind of tired of seeing that, and Charles Hudon is a great player. And if he gets hurt, you know, well, I guess screw him, right, for making a play and playing hockey the right way. Like, you know, good on Chris Wagner for trying to stay in the league or whatnot. Like, I have a hard time with that play.
I get what you're saying, but that's – I don't know.
I have a hard time with those plays. And I would be saying the same thing if it was a guy in the Canadiens laying that hit, because I've seen it.
Let's fast forward a bit then, because there was a play later, and I believe it was in the third period.
But that one's a little different, though.
Okay, because I saw that
one. Are you talking about the Perry hit?
Yes, the Perry hit.
Okay, so that's a little different. Let me
get your take on that.
Okay, so this is actually perfect, because I have like one note to start the third period, which was just a Cogliano breakaway, which means a save for the other team, basically. Hey, so let's move on.
I'll give Cogliano a bit of credit there. He beat him between the arm and the body, and it was just somehow caught a piece of Niemi.
Yeah, but it's anti-Niemi. Come on.
Well, yeah, but still, like,
I just love how Cogliano's move on the breakaway is like the most like difficult looking wrist shot. Like, it looks like it's like a chore to get it off.
Yeah, but let's give him a bit of credit here. He beat him. It was unlucky. It happened.
You're right. Right.
But
yeah.
He did beat Niemi there.
I wonder how many Ducks fans are gonna like hate me after this pod, because this is like the, I think this is the worst I've been.
Oh, everyone, yeah. As if they didn't hate you enough already, Felix.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, keep in mind, like, this is a game against the team that I root for. Yeah. So my takes are gonna be a little different than they typically are.
Hey, you bring a good perspective. I think that's why people like us.
Or maybe. Well, like, I'm us. Also wearing my jersey.
I don't know if they actually like us. I think they all hate us, really.
They tolerate us.
Yes, there we go.
And tolerance is the key.
I think George might be the only one that likes us, and I think it's because we might force him to a bit.
Yeah, well, hey, any man who's willing to not shower for a week,
good point.
You know, give him credit. But let's get right to that hit that you mentioned. Tomáš Plekanec receives the puck on the left side of the ice and I believe gets his shot off, but really has possession of the puck. Perry comes in, hits him real hard, but it's a clean hit. It's shoulder to shoulder, sends him flying. And I think the reason why Plekanec was so badly shaken up on that play was because he didn't really see it coming. Mm-hmm. You know, he was focused on getting his shot off, and Plekanec's clearly rattled. I think he did return to the game.
Yeah, he did.
You know, but it's just one of those hits that, like, to me, that's a hockey play. Like, the guy has the puck, shoulder to shoulder, you get him hard, but you separated him from the puck, or at least, you know, just about in that moment. And
threw him off on a shot.
Unfortunate result, but to me, that's a legit play. Okay. That's like a different category than that Wagner play.
That's
in
fair.
My opinion.
That's
fair. I don't know what you thought of it, though.
I'm completely fine with that play. He's coming in. Plekanec is releasing the shot. He's trying to throw him off the shot a bit. Like I said, I'm not as harsh on the Wagner play as you are. I think you're being a bit harsh on it because it was on Hudon, probably. But I just hate those plays.
I just hate those plays in general.
I think you're. I'll give you this.
I hate those.
You're being a bit consistent here, because I feel like you've been harsh on Manson in the past for doing that. So I'll give you
credit. Yeah, I think I have. I've also been hard on Wagner for this the entire season.
That's fair. So I disagree with you on this, but I give you props for being consistent.
Consistency is key, yeah.
If there's anything that we do, we're always consistent.
Well, I mean, I remember earlier in the season, I specifically remember this, there was a game where Brian Hayward had mentioned that, you know, Chris Wagner was becoming one of the most feared body checkers in the league. And I didn't say this at the time, but I addressed it and I disagreed with it because I didn't think it really they're not legit checks at all. And I'm going to say this now, but like, yeah, he's feared because you let go of the puck and you might get your face smashed in like 2 seconds later. Well, so that's why he's feared, because they're dirty hits.
I think if the league feels that way and agrees with you on that, what they need to do is they need to start being harsher on interference. And it needs to be something where if you are going to hit a guy, he has to have had the puck when you started engaging. There should not be a window afterwards, because the only issue that I have with kind of your thought process here on this is that's something that's kind of been, and this does not make it okay.
Oh, they accept it. It's in the rules. Like, the finishing your check is allowed. Yes. Like, it's written in the interference rule.
And coaches always want to see it. And kind of that's what I was trying to get to with an earlier point, is that that type of hit is what will keep Wagner in the lineup in Carlisle's mind. So not me defending the hit. That's not me saying I'm okay with it, but I'm just saying the way that the league has set it up and the way coaches coach, that's something that he has to do to probably try to stay in the lineup. And that's that's the thing.
Oh yeah. And I've said as much in regards to Wagner. Like, I've like almost verbatim I've said that about Wagner in the past. And, you know, like, I understand it's a part of the game. Like, I'm well aware of that. I just think it's a bad part of the game. Okay. Like, I just, like, I don't know when we started accepting that you can just hit a guy without the puck. Oh, because I guess he just had it or whatever. Like, it's just, anyway, this is purely my opinion. Like,
and one thing I'll say is it's come a long way, though, since the early 2000s when you had Scott Stevens taking guys out. Headshots that were 2 seconds late. So
the Paul Kariya hit was not a penalty.
Yeah. So
how is that possible?
I think that we can be critical, but I think we also should realize it's come a long way and gotten a lot better than it used to be.
Yeah, and I mean, it's no need to belabor any further here.
Yeah.
So with about 6 minutes remaining in the game, Canadians go on the power play. Jeff Petrie gets the puck in the left faceoff circle and kind of has all the time in the world. You know, he could have made a grilled cheese, you know, caught up on his latest Netflix series, and then gotten back into the game with the puck. Skates it in, takes like two strides in, and picks its corner short side. For whatever reason, Red O'Bear is super deep in his net. Obviously, it's posting in, so it's a perfect shot. Also looks perfect because Bear is not really on his angle, not really coming out to challenge. And at that point, you know, the game is 5-2 and kind of all she wrote.
Yeah, it wasn't a great penalty for Lindholm to take either. He turned the puck over at the blue line in the offensive zone, comes back, and I forgot who was on the ice actually with him at the time, but they were back defensively and he didn't have to really hook the guy. And I think also at that point in time, you got to just let him go, because taking the penalty is almost worse than letting him go in on the breakaway. If he scores, whatever. That's game. You were down 2 goals. But you take that penalty, you're now taking away 2 minutes of the game. And they're probably going to score on that anyways, because you're going to be flying the zone. So take your chances. Let your goalie have that. On the actual goal, I'm kind of ashamed that you didn't let your French-Canadian... background coming in and say that he could have had some poutine there.
Yeah, well, I already dropped the poutine earlier in the game.
That's fair.
Right. I should have. I guess because Petrie's a Western Canadian boy, so, or is he?
I don't know.
Or I know he played for the Oilers. Here, let me quickly Google this. I know he played for the Oilers.
He's from Michigan.
He's American. Wow, I really botched that.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a Michigander, so he has like he doesn't even care about poutine. Although I guess, you know, living in Montreal, I'm sure he's grown an affinity for it. By the way, poutine in Montreal, or I guess in Quebec in general, that's real poutine. Any poutine you'll have elsewhere, even if you go somewhere else in Canada, that's not real poutine.
On a quick
I just want to make that known.
On a quick side note, I recently, someone I follow that is more in the nerdy news sector of the world, was in Quebec, and he tweeted out a picture of it was a cup of gravy with cheese curds in it. Is that a real thing?
Poutine without the fries?
Yeah, it was a cup of gravy with cheese curds.
I think that's like a side you can get at some poutine places.
You French Canadians.
It's like extra. I don't want to hear it, man. Have you seen some of these American, like, diners and some, like, have you watched, like, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives or whatever? Like, come on.
No, but there is a place right near me. Really good food, actually. It's called Tavern on 2nd in Belmont Shore. They do a, what is it? Is it a duck poutine? Something like that. It's so good.
I think I've heard of this place. It's, I think I've been told to go there.
It's really good poutine.
Well, let me tell you this. The best poutine I've ever had, and this is what makes it so hard to like appreciate other poutines. I mean, I've had some good ones in Montreal, you know, because obviously like Montreal, it's just probably one of the like top three best food cities in the world. But then the best one I've had was actually Quebec City, not in Quebec City. Technically, it's called L'Île d'Orléans. It's right outside. It's like an island, literally an island along the St. Lawrence River. And there's like, it's like an island that's like basically like pretty rural. And the summer after my college graduation, or that summer, my parents, you know, my family, we went out there. We went to Quebec for like a month or whatever. And we stayed in like this house was built in like the 1600s, but it's obviously been renovated, but it's like on this island, right? And on the side of the road, there was like a little shack selling poutine. And I had the poutine from there, and easily the best I've ever had. And I've had some pretty good ones. So that's, but you know, that's how it is with any food. Like the best stuff is always, you know, the hole in the wall.
The hole
like,
in the wall Mexican food places that we have.
Exactly.
Right here.
It's the same thing. Another thing in Quebec that's really great, and this is like totally random, hot dogs. The hot dogs at the Bell Center, this is like a known thing, by the way. The hot dogs at the Bell Center are the best hot dogs in the league, like by a significant margin.
I'll have to remember that if I ever make it there.
If you ever go to the Bell Center, get the hot dogs, because like that's what you get with poutine. That's like the classic accompanying meal. Hot dogs.
I have never heard that, but okay.
Yeah, so like they're I forget what the term is, but basically the thing that they do is they steam them, and so like they're very like they're not like soggy or anything, but they just have this like perfect consistency. And but what they do is at the Bell Center is that the bread they use, it's not like a typical hot dog bun. It's like
French roll.
I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of like a, it's almost like a like sliced bread, but then they toast each side, like kind of like in a like a George Foreman or something, and then you have that dog in the middle, and it's just, it's the best. You throw a little relish on there, or mustard and ketchup, whatever your condiment of choice is, and it's the best. They're actually called the company that makes those, or like the brand, is the LaFleur hot dogs at the Bell Center. So yeah.
So really quickly,
we got way off topic.
Yeah,
Jesus,
but
I'm sorry.
I want to be very consistent and be correct with what I said. Tavern on 2, it's a short rib poutine.
Oh,
so it's braised short rib, hand cut fries, duck fat, and Wisconsin cheese curds.
Yeah, duck fat is the best.
Oh, it's so good. It's
good. I really, honestly, any hockey fan, anyone who's listening to this podcast, like, you really have to go out to Montreal to see a Habs game. Like it's how hockey is meant to be enjoyed, you know, because like the arena is literally in the downtown of Montreal. The food is unbelievable. The beer, there's no shortage of beer. Like the fans are so passionate. Like it's highly recommended. But anyway,
well, on that really quickly, and this kind of goes into tonight's game. Did you think it was weird that it was a 1 p.m. start? Because it's hockey night in Canada, so I figured that and Montreal is one of the premier teams for hockey night in Canada, aren't they?
So here's the thing. So every year, Super Bowl weekend, the Canadians do this thing called the Family Weekend, where they have a back-to-back at the Bell Center, and it's two 1 p.m. starts to basically, like offset the fact that a lot of people are going to be watching the Super Bowl. So they do that every year. Yeah.
That
so
makes some insider knowledge there.
Yeah. No, it's kind of fun actually. But anyway, sorry, I had to go on my little tirade here.
The game didn't deserve us to talk about it the whole time. We need to talk about poutine. It's the real thing here.
I'm realizing that I'm quite hungry.
So am I. As we've been talking, I ordered food for delivery.
Oh gosh, are you a Postmates guy?
I use Yelp to order Soulmate. If we want to give more plugs to other places that I like,
Soulmate. What's that?
Soulmate. It's in Long Beach. It is a burrito Korean place.
I was gonna guess Korean. Yeah,
mm-hmm. It's a bulgogi and white rice and kimchi and some sriracha in a burrito. It's amazing.
You know what? I've actually had that before, not from that place, but I went to the Outside Lands Music Festival a couple years ago. And they had food trucks, yeah. And one of them was like a Korean kind of like Mexican fusion or whatever. And I had like three in like a 3-day span.
Yeah. So I'm on point. That's being delivered right now.
Wow. Yeah. I have like pasta leftovers in the fridge. So yeah. Anyway, let's ignore that. Hey, I love my home cooked pasta, but anyway. So with all that being said, zooming out here after today's game, after today's regulation loss, the Ducks are still in the third spot in the Pacific Division with 60 points. LA at 59. Does LA play tonight? Yes, they play Arizona today.
Yes, and
so if the Kings lose in overtime, do they overtake the Ducks for the third spot?
If the Kings lose in overtime, then yes, because of games played. So actually, as a brief little plug right now we're testing out with having this playoff push article come out every day, breaking down the different games with the different teams in it that kind of affect the Ducks in their playoff race. We'll see if we keep doing it every day. As of right now, that's the plan. But so if you want to see that, go to that article. And yes, the Kings are playing, and if the Kings lose, then the Ducks will be tied with them. The Kings actually still hold games played advantage, so they'll take that spot. The two games that are really of the most importance to the Ducks tonight are the Flames game and the Kings game. Because the Flames, I believe, are 2 points back of the Ducks, so if they win, then they will also jump the Ducks because of games played. So if both the Flames and Kings lose in regulation, the Ducks will stay in that third spot. If one of them win, then the Ducks will be dropped out of the playoff spot because of also both teams in the wild card, as of right now, have more points than the Ducks.
All right. So, yeah, it's still a very, very tight playoff picture. Definitely recommend checking out these articles because, like, basically the Ducks are in the playoffs already. Not actually participating, obviously, but every game is huge, and you have to scoreboard watch every night.
Yep. Also, as part of that article, one of the commenters on it brought me to the fact that Hockey Reference has their own predictive model for the playoffs.
Oh, do they?
They do. And so this was prior to the loss, but going into today's game, the Ducks had a 52.8% chance of making the playoffs. Vegas is at 99%, San Jose is at 73%, LA is at 65%, Calgary is at 35%. And so that's kind of your Pacific Division setup. And the Oilers are at 1.4% chance. And the Coyotes are already out.
The LOL Oilers. So good. All right, we got anything else for today? Or are we going to go get our food here?
No, I don't think we got anything else. The Mixler chat, we had a couple listeners here and there, but I think just
kind of an odd time. You know, it's the weekend.
Yep. So, yeah. And just stay tuned for kind of stuff next week. We're trying to get something big planned and big going on. So
just keep
an eye on Twitter.
Stay tuned for some news here. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, with all that being said, I'd like to remind everyone, please give us a rating, review, subscribe on Apple Podcasts. I got to start calling Apple Podcasts. It's actually not iTunes.
Oh, it's not?
Well, the official name is the Apple Podcast app. So. Hmm. I gotta join the times here. Get with the times. We are on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/acpod, anaheimcalling.com, at anaheimcalling on Twitter. That's where you can find all of our stuff. At RainierGames91 is where you can find Jake on Twitter. Weekly rankings are going to be out on Monday from now on, So be on the lookout this Monday. I am on Twitter at Felix_Sicard, tweeting out the podcast, writing. By the way, quick plug here. Just found out today I will be on the Sportsnet 590 The Fan radio show tomorrow, talking Ducks. I guess they want a Ducks perspective since the Ducks do play the Leafs on Monday.
Woo-hoo.
So I will be on there at 10:40 our time. So if you follow them, or if you want to hear me talk to some East Coast bigwigs here, I definitely recommend it. Should be a lot of fun.
It should.
And
having listened to stuff on the Fan 590 before, you can usually find their feed. I believe they live stream the radio feed on their website at the Fan 590 or at Sportsnet's website. Or if you use the apps like TuneIn or something like that, you can find the Fan 590 on there. So I'd highly suggest to everyone to listen to Felix tomorrow. I know I will be.
Yeah. Support your boy. I'm very excited. I got to have all my notes ready for tomorrow, as I always do with our pod. I will make sure, of course, to plug the pod, plug the site. Very excited about that. Very excited to hopefully get the show a little love here.
There probably won't be as much poutine talk on there.
No. I'm gonna be a little more mainstream tomorrow, unfortunately. So I'm gonna be a little more corporate, but that's okay. All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining in, and we will talk to you Monday post Leafs Ducks. Should be a lot of fun. Talk to you then.
Bye.